Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. You know, we do this thing as guys, and I don't want to chastise you because you may not be like me, but we have to learn accountability, right? I feel like we do, and it's a hard thing, especially for kids nowadays, because I don't know if it's how we were brought up, but you know, when a kid gets, I said this for long, when we got in trouble in school, John, do you ever get in trouble in school? Like, you don't strike me as somebody who ever got in trouble.
I would say no. I do. One time I was late for school. We went to McDonald's before class, and the principal of detention or whatever went to McDonald's and found us there. So I did get in trouble for, but for 99% of the time, I did not.
Right. Right. I can't lie. I did get in trouble. And I can tell you that anytime I got in trouble, there was hell to pay at home. And there was never any of this like, oh, the teacher. Now, kid gets in trouble, and most parents will say, like, you know, the teacher's just unreasonable. Or they'll call the principal about the teacher just to make sure that the teacher's on the up and up. And look, I'll be, you know, I'm probably letting you in on too much. We had an issue our first year in California where my son was actually called in because there was an incident where his teacher had allegedly pushed another kid. And like, you know, at the time, was he like 8 years old? Like, you know, just tell the truth. And he said what he saw. And that was it. So sometimes it has been the teacher a little bit, but not every time. And we see this. I coach AAU basketball. You know, when the kid plays poorly, it's something about the coach or about the other kids. We don't teach them that sometimes it's you. Like, I think as adult males, you know, if you ever gone to therapy, you're like, at some point you got to go like, yeah, hey, you know what? I am kind of a pain in the ass. I do this and my relationships may go sideways because of me, not because, well, she's crazy, right? Like, guys always say, well, she's crazy. Well, maybe you made her crazy, right? It's interesting. We're in this place with the Dallas Cowboys where they're a mess. And it's really hard to tell, are they this bad or are they just so injured that they can never get to whatever potential they had previously? Yesterday, there was a story. Jane Slater is a friend of the program, works at the NFL Network. She plus also has the Boys and Girl podcast for the Dallas Cowboys. That's on the Herd Podcast Network. Jane Slater broke the story. She had a quote from an unnamed player who said, you know, they're not teaching us. They're not good at their jobs. This is Mike McCarthy responding to those reports.
You don't want to be stubborn and just do things to do things. And that's why I think it's important for all of our players and coaches, and it's something that I've stated in the first meeting. Let's just handle these things as men. Let's talk to one another. I'm your guy. I mean, I'll talk to anybody, you know, in our inner circle. I mean, I'll either agree or disagree with you, and I think it's important. But at the end of the day, it's about winning. We're in a business of putting players in position to win.
So that's a non-answer answer. That's basically him saying, really, you're going to go to a reporter instead of airing those grievances in one of our meeting rooms, right? Like, what are you doing? Which I would agree with. You know, if you challenge coaches, especially, and, you know, we don't actually talk about this a lot, but I think if you challenge coaches, like, the first thing you should do, if you think your coach doesn't know what he's doing, or if he's putting you in a bad position, the first thing you should do is you go and sit with that coach in his office. You're like, can we have an open discussion about something, just something I've seen? The second chance you have is in your position meeting group meetings where you can air your grievances. You have to do it kind of politically correctly. You can't just go like, well, this won't work. Or that didn't work. That's on you guys. The third chance you have is in any sort of team meetings. And of course, you can be very vague. Hey, you know, just just so everybody's aware, like, some of the stuff we don't really understand, and it's new to us, and we're not sure if it's being taught. Maybe we can slow down and break down and go back over things. If all of those are exhausted, and then you go to the head coach, and there's no change, well, then, yeah, like, you're like, look, I brought it up with my coach, my position coach, in the meeting room, with the defense, with the head coach. I've done it over the last couple weeks, and nothing has changed. Well, then, yeah, by all means, if you want to go and tell Jane Slater, like, we've been working on this, and they're not getting any better, we're not getting any better, I don't find it irresponsible to go to the media. If you are 5 weeks into a season with a new coaching staff when you didn't have OTAs, you didn't have a normal traditional training camp, you didn't have preseason games, and you haven't aired those grievances with all of those different layers yet, then you know what? You're out of line going to the media. And I'm not one of these you have to be a name source guy. Deep Throat was not a name source, and that seemed to be credible and brought down the president. But there's something kind of bigger at play here. This is one of those, at some point in time, it's not just the players or the coaches. At some point in time, it's the culture. How else can you explain? Now, look, the Cowboys, and this is always interesting, everybody said Jason Garrett can't coach. Like, do you realize that they were as good the last 5 years as they've been since 96? Over the last 5 years, they won 13, 9, 10, 8. And if you go back to the last year Romo was healthy, 12, then 4 when it was Whedon and Matt Castle and other guys. Okay. If you go back that year, we won 4 games. But if we realize since 1996, that was the last year that they had back-to-back 10-win seasons. 1996. I was a freshman in college in 1996. Okay, now here's, okay, you want to say the league is really hard. Couldn't agree with you more. League's very, very difficult. Very difficult. All right, let's take a look at, I don't know, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Right? The Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's look at their team and their franchise index, right? The Pittsburgh Steelers, they had 4 straight 10-win seasons up until 3 years ago, and last year they only won 8 games, even though they played 2 quarterbacks after Ben Roethlisberger got hurt, and neither were any good. That's about culture. 6 different times the Steelers have had back-to-back double-digit win seasons since 2000. The Dallas Cowboys since 2000 have had 0. Now, part of it is they haven't changed. They only changed coaches once. Part of it is that's how ownership is. They're built around their defense. They're not flashy. They don't sign free agents for the most part. Like, all of these things. But there's something to your culture and the accountability of, hey, we screwed up. Let's go get better. Hey, we don't know what we're doing. Let's talk about it. I mean, the last guy to call out anybody on the Pittsburgh Steelers was Antonio Brown. Notice he's not on the Pittsburgh Steelers anymore. You know? I mean, the same is true for the Patriots. Look how many consecutive 10-win seasons they've had. That's the sign of a great season in the NFL. Everyone else is between 7-9 and 9-7. You win 10 games, you've done something special. The Patriots won 10 games with Matt Castle as quarterback. There's something to the culture of Dallas. The idea that, you know, you screw up, Jerry's still going to get take care of you. You're still a Cowboy. You know, as long as you can make plays, they'll find a home for you. It's just fascinating to me on how it doesn't really matter who the coach is. You can sit here and tell me, well, Mike McCarthy's not a high-end coach, and it's Jerry who screws it up because he won't hire a big-time coach. Like, okay, well, you know, I hate to be that guy, but Bill Parcells was the head coach for 4 years in Dallas. And he got frustrated because, I mean, I know Romo dropped the snap in the playoff game in Parcells last year there when they lost in Seattle in the wild card. And Parcells, as good a coach he is, 10 wins, 6 wins, 9 wins, 9 wins. Wade Phillips, Jason Garrett, now Mike McCarthy, Chan Gailey. None of them can solve the riddle. Why? Because this starts at the top of their culture. You have an owner that rewards great talent, not necessarily great teammates. How many times do we have to see it to realize that's exactly what it is? And I could use all kinds of stats. I could be critical. I don't like the Mike Nolan hire. I'm not sure if the game's passed him by, but there's a reason that he hadn't sniffed a coordinator job, and it was payback for him hiring Mike McCarthy way back in the day. All of that said, yes, injuries play a major factor. But the other factor is you just don't have a culture where players are held accountable. You don't have a culture where players are called out, where players, if you don't know what you're supposed to be doing, well, damn it, you might do the wrong thing, but you'll at least do it hard. This team, if they don't know what they're supposed to be, if they're in the wrong gap, they just quit. They quit on their coaches, which does not bode well for Mike McCarthy in the short and long term, but also speaks poorly of the organization as a whole. Coming up next, a former NFL player suggesting Trevor Lawrence should go back to Clemson for another season if the Jets finish winless and have essentially his draft rights. I'll tell you why that's absurd next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. The Big Leads website, Jason McIntyre started it. I think he sold it. Right? Now he does the Straight Fire podcast. Anyway, this is Roddy White, a longtime NFL wide receiver. Roddy White on Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence.
If the Jets get the first pick, don't go. Just stay. Just stay 1 more year in college and just enjoy your time, man. Just enjoy your time in college, because it would be awful for you to get drafted by the Jets, because they don't not know how to put anything together over there as far as quarterbacking, as far as weapons around a quarterback, as far as anything that has to do with offensive thing, talent. They can draft defensively, and they do a hell of a job on that side of the ball. But as far as offense, man, that team is just bad at picking players.
Yeah. Listen, I don't dispute that. But again, first of all, Joe Douglas is not responsible for every guy on that roster. He's been the GM for like 2 years now, and he picked a very good left tackle. Do I think they put enough weaponry around Sam Darnold? The answer is absolutely not. But again, let me remind you what you're suggesting. You're suggesting that Trevor Lawrence would be the number one overall pick, would go back to Clemson, where all you can do is hurt your draft stock. That's it. There's nothing else. You cannot help your... All you can do is hurt your draft stock if you go back. Secondly, it's the number one media market in the country, right? Like, were the Chargers poorly run? Not really. I mean, A.J. Smith wasn't that well loved when Eli Manning and his dad kind of held him hostage and they made a trade. But part of it was the Mannings wanted to get to New York. Mission accomplished, 2 Super Bowls. And the Giants are seen as a better run organization, but the Giants are down the dip. But here's the big thing. Okay. Let's say it's not the Jets. Who else needs a quarterback? The Redskins? Do they have a great team? The Giants. Right? They drafted Saquon Barkley, who's hurt. They traded away. Their current GM traded away Odell Beckham Jr. So if it was about drafting and keeping players, they got rid of one of the elite wide receivers in the NFL. Well, let's go through the worst teams in the league. Right? If it's the Eagles, I don't think they're replacing Carson Wentz, but it's not for lack of trying. They've gone out and they drafted like 6 wide receivers. Any team you go to in the bottom 5 of the NFL draft, for the most part, is going to be terrible. And you're terrible for a litany of reasons. But I would also point out that the Jets have had success. They were in back-to-back AFC championship games within the last, 10 years or so. And, oh yeah, by the way, if Trevor Lawrence really doesn't want to play for the Jets, I'm sure for a Pirates bounty, they would trade the rights to that pick. They absolutely would, which is what I would do if I was the Jets. But we do these things where we you know, it's Stephen A. saying Odell Beckham Jr. should want to be traded. That's great. They're not trading him. Trevor Lawrence should go back to school. That's great. But guess what's not happening? Trevor Lawrence is not going back for another year. You know, it's just not going to happen. We say dumb things that have no, like no one, I guess I'm like the only guy, and I like Roddy White. I got nothing against him. I love to have him on. But the reality is Trevor Lawrence is gone. He's not coming back. The only question is, who's going to draft him, or are they going to trade his rights to somebody who's going to have to load up and move heaven and earth to get him?
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
The one and only Daniel Jeremiah joins us. Move the Sticks is the podcast. He also does the Amazon Prime. It's kind of like Mystery Science Theater 3000, watching the football games. They did that special edition on Monday night. He does a lot of things. Broadcast the Chargers game. Let me start with the story of yesterday, which is Tua Tagovailoa named a starter. And this was Ryan Fitzpatrick earlier today.
This profession is interesting in that I got fired yesterday, and then my day of work today consisted of me in Zoom meetings listening to the guy that fired me, and then, you know, locked in a spaced out room, you know, with my replacement for 4 hours today. So there aren't a whole lot of jobs that are like that.
He did not sound pleased as punch. He was really surprised because he's played well. What's your reaction to the timing of the decision and the reason, the logic behind the decision?
Well, I totally understand where Fitz is coming from and being frustrated, but to me, I think it was the right decision. And the reason I say that, Doug, is because you have to make a decision if you're the Miami Dolphins. Do you want to chase a T-shirt that says you got in as a wild card team, or do you want to chase a title and try and build the team that can eventually win a championship? When you think about the ultimate goal of building a championship team, one of the easiest ways to do that, or one of the best ways, I should say, to do that, is to get that accomplished while you have a rookie on that first contract where you can build up around him. So the clock has already started once they took Tua in the draft. So once he proved that, A, he was healthy, B, that he knew the offense well enough to be successful, and C, that he'd be able to handle some of the adversity that's going to come along with some of the initial struggles, you've got to put him out on the field and let him start getting those valuable reps so that you can get him up to speed and you have a chance to, you know, chase the bigger prizes as you go forward. And to me, it's a long-term decision, and I think it was the right one.
Can't you do both? I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs did both. They sat Mahomes the first year, played in week 17, went to the playoffs, didn't accomplish much. Then the second year, they turned it over to him. Can't you do both?
I think it's totally different. I think, first of all, Patrick Mahomes had a lot more to develop in terms of where he was when he entered the league. I mean, he couldn't spit out a play call when he first got there. We see the MVP that he is now, but he had further ground to go. That was a team that was capable of being, you know, a team capable of making a run to be in a conference championship game type talent there with Kansas City. This Miami team is not at that level. And I think Tua is more equipped to get out on the field and play right away. So, I think it's a little bit different, and I just think you want to get him up to speed and get him rolling. I don't think I think it's going to be a little bit of a drop off initially from Fitz to Tua, but I don't think it's going to be much.
I tend to agree, and people forget that Fitz is 37. It's not like he's, you know, in his prime, but boy, he seemed really surprised by it. I guess he probably expected it to happen if he was playing poorly. Keep in mind, he was playing against the Jets, and they got a bye week, and I feel like this was a little bit predetermined. Daniel Jeremiah joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. By the way, do you have Dodger fever yet, and Mr. Padre fan?
Oh, it's so gross. I know. I thought you would have been an Angel fan.
I am an Angel fan. I am an Angel fan, but here's my logic behind it. Like, I got no bones to pick with Clayton Kershaw. I feel like the dude has been, he was overused so often, and he made some mistakes, and I kind of just want to see him win it. Plus, I feel like the Astros, that Astro World Series is tainted, and this would one further taint it, but it would right a little bit of a wrong if they won. I like the Dodgers. Yeah. I love the Angels.
Yeah, I mean, look, as somebody, you grew up in San Diego, you're conditioned to just hate everything about the Dodgers. But I will say, it's Clayton Kershaw is easy to like, and I would say Mookie Betts is impossible to hate. I mean, like, Mookie Betts is so good and so fun to watch. I mean, that, I'm sure you can do segment after segment about how Boston allowed that to happen. But you know, look, I have a lot of Dodger fan friends, and the people that I'm friends with, I'll actually be happy for them when they win it, because they're we're close and they're good. And it'll be fun for them. But there's another segment of Dodger fan that's just
obnoxious. Oh, obnoxious. No, it's obnoxious. It's obnoxious. It's those section. They were all in on Manny World, and they forget that Manny was a juice head back when it was Manny World. So I'm with you on that one. Daniel Jeremiah, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. You and I have discussed the Mike Nolan hire. Now you have Mike McCarthy, who has to defend him and his coaching staff, because somebody told Jane Slater our coaches are bad at their jobs. How much of it is mismatched personnel for what they're doing? How much of it is the coaching and maybe the league passing Mike Nolan by? And how much of it is entitled players lacking effort? And how much of it is injuries? Because I don't know anybody who's winning without three offensive linemen and their starting quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, I'll answer a couple parts of it here. I can't do the injury thing, because I mean, I look, you might not win games, but you can't use it as an excuse. The Philadelphia Eagles, I'm getting ready to do their game for Thursday. They've played 13 offensive linemen this year.
They're 1-3-1, right?
I know. I mean, like, that's what I'm saying. We can go through all of these teams that are not playing well, and you can say they're all injuries.
Correct.
Injury teams.
Yes, that's fair. But why is it not fair?
No, I think you can say that they're all having injuries, but I think the way that it's discussed is that the Dallas Cowboys are the only team in the National Football League that's playing without guys. Like, everybody is playing without guys. The 49ers obviously have a better football team, but you look at the guy that they're missing. I mean, so I don't know. I just it's a weird year. There's a lot of injuries all over the league. My point that I'm getting to is, we can argue about is it this injury, is it that? Well, you can't argue about the effort that we saw from the Dallas Cowboys that we've seen. That's indisputable. Now, if you want to say that the game's passed Mike Nolan by, or that he's not the right answer for them, and the players are upset with him, yeah, I get it. Maybe you are, maybe he has, but I can't answer that. What I can answer is, you guys don't play very hard. That's what I can't
answer. Okay, so, but do they not play hard because they don't believe in what they're being told? Do they not play hard because, you know, that Jerry will take care of them and have their back eventually? Like, or do you, if you're Steven, do you... You cut somebody, you know, you walk in, you just cut, just like, you know, it's like you fire somebody if you own a business in order to get the message through to everybody else.
Yeah, I would probably go that route. I mean, Doug, look at it from basketball. I'd love to get your take on this. You've been on teams, I'm sure, where you didn't agree with where the offense was running or how it was being done. It does never excuse you not hustling to get back on defense. Like, that stuff's just stuff you're taught when you're a little kid. Just hustle.
I coach 11 and 12 and 13 year olds. And I every game I take guy, and their parents are like, why'd you take him out? I was like we took him out because it was turnover. I was like, No, I didn't. You assumed I did. I took him out because after he turned the basketball over, then he looked at me, looked at the ref, did something with his hands instead of getting his ass back on defense and helping his teammates out.
Yes.
That's why it was like, no, you took my kid out because he missed the shot. Like, no. It was a bad shot. It was a terrible shot. Mm-hmm. It was an awful shot. I was not happy with the shot. But that's not why I took him out. Mm-hmm. I took him out because if you don't, you can do that, but don't run back on defense. You're going to make bad decisions. That's not a bad decision. That's a lack of effort. So I get it. I just, how do they get to this point to where, like, you got dudes, I mean, they just look awful.
Yeah, they're just not very competitive. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is there. I know usually when you have issues like that, you usually go younger.
Yep.
Because, you know, younger guys, you
hungry.
Know, are trying to make a name for themselves.
Yeah.
They're hungry, and they might be going the wrong direction, but they're going to go there 100 miles an hour.
What happened with the Packers? Why they just melted down after the second pick? What happened?
Well, I just got beat up front, you know. I mean, I thought that Tampa team dominated the line of scrimmage, and Ronald Jones ran it down their throats. I mean, that to me would be the discouraging thing, is having seen what the Niners did to them, and then seeing Tampa, who has a very physical offensive line, and I saw it in the Charger game. They're in for Ronald Jones had over 100 yards in that game, so he's rolling right now. But the Packers, as good as the quarterback is, and he's tremendous. The belief around the league and the thought about the Packers around the league is, once it gets into a street fight and it gets down and dirty and it comes down to what you have up front on the line of scrimmage, that they're just not quite good enough.
How does it reflect on Aaron Rodgers?
Well, I almost think in some ways that it points out that he's been able to elevate what is not the not the greatest group in front of him that he's had there. So I think they've kind of been labeled as having one of these, you know, one of a great offensive line or one of the upper echelon offensive lines. I think it's just okay. I don't think it's great, and I don't think Aaron's, you know, capable of being able to lift everybody else up around him when they're getting that dominated up front. And I don't know necessarily says a whole lot about Aaron as much as what he's got.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Daniel Jeremiah. I played sound of Roddy White saying, hey, if I was advising Trevor Lawrence and the Jets get the number one pick, I'd tell him to stay in school. I was like, it sounds cool to say, but that's not the reality, right? Like, I actually, if I'm the Jets, I trade that pick if I get it anyway, because I still have faith in Darnold, and they have so many holes that they could shore up. But I operate, there's no possible way in which he goes back to school, is there?
I don't think so. And look, I know their general manager very well. We've been friends for 20 years and worked together for a long time. And I know they're a complete mess right now. He hadn't had really much of a chance to put his imprint on that team.
Yep.
So when I look at it, and I look at somebody who's spent, you know, the majority of his career under Ozzie Newsome and the most stable franchises in the NFL, and that's how he's brought up, Joe Douglas is not an idiot. And this is a team where, if you want to look at two different scenarios, right? Say you have the number one pick. And what you were saying, if you want to, you know, build around Sam, and I'm a big Sam believer, if you can get the right pieces there, you could auction that off. You're talking about three first-round picks you'd get for that first overall pick. I mean, you get a boatload of picks. But keep in mind, they already have an extra first-round pick this year and next year from Seattle. So if they – let's say that they want to take Trevor Lawrence 1-1, right? You take Trevor Lawrence, that's one pick. That means you also have the first pick in the second round, which is pick 33. You've got Seattle's pick, which is going to be in the, you know, bottom of the first round. That's three first rounders. And I guarantee you could trade Sam Darnold for a late one to one of those good teams that would never get a quarterback of that quality. So you could start next year with four of the top 33 picks to build a young team with who I think they have when he's healthy and he's missed a couple games here. Mekhi Becton's got a chance to be the best left tackle in the entire league. So now you've got a pretty good young nucleus, and you got two first round picks the next year. So I think people look at these situations and think they're eternal, and it's like, nah, they could get this thing turned around. It's not going to take quite as long as it as ugly as it looks right now.
No, I agree. Just, you know, it's I've used the getting my house painted analogy. I remember halfway through I was like, paint it back, and you know, I waited till it was painted and took a lap around it. It's like, you know what? I actually kind of like it. It's hard when a rehab project is halfway done. Daniel Jeremiah, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. A couple more kind of quickies, if you will. But I felt like, you know, Garoppolo played better, but there's still some frustration there. What's your sense of Garoppolo and Shanahan in that mix?
I still doesn't feel like it's long for me. I mean, it does not feel like this is going to be something that goes forward for a long time. But when I was thinking about teams for Sam Darnold, if the Jets did trade him, I mean, that to me would be a perfect spot for somebody like that. I think Sam Darnold's a better player than Jimmy Garoppolo. It just shows you the difference between situations, right, of where you land and who you're around. I don't get the sense that Kyle totally trusts him. I mean, that's the sense I come away with every time you watch.
I think everybody watched the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl and thought the exact same thing, and it hasn't changed. And rightfully so. We've seen what happens when he does trust him is that he makes a boneheaded error or two. OBJ takes off his helmet and his shoes in classic OBJ fashion. What do you do if you're Cleveland?
You got to figure out how to get your quarterback to play better.
He's just not that good. He's just not that good.
I think we talked about it. I remember us chatting about that during that draft, leading up to that draft. And the question was with Baker is, look, I think entering into the NFL, he's going to be ahead of some of these guys, and he's going to have a chance to have some success early on, but he's hitting his head on the ceiling. Like, he is what he is. He's played a lot of football. He's played well at the college level. But he has limitations, and I don't know that you're necessarily going to see him continue to improve and get better. And we haven't seen that. I think he played his best football his first year. So now you're Cleveland, and you're thinking, geez, we thought we finally had one here. You know, it's tough if you don't hit a home run when you're taking a quarterback 1-1. That's a tough one.
DJ, great stuff, man. Look forward to hearing you Thursday night. Thanks so much for joining us on Fox Sports Radio.
All right, see you, bud.
The world's biggest Dodger fan, Daniel Jeremiah, joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. I'm kidding. He's a huge Padre fan. Bruce Arians had some funny comments about Gronk. I'll share them with you next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Every day this time, we play for you a portion of a previous show on Fox Sports Radio, or Fox Sports 1. We call it...
What does the Fox say?
This is Bruce Arians, who, by the way, was a colleague for a period of time at Fox Sports, talking with DP about Gronk.
I think he's playing really, really good. You know, his number... When teams want to double cover Mike Evans, it kind of opens up the field for Gronk. And he was working through it early in the season. He's in great shape. And I think we're doing a better job of coaching him up a little bit and Tom too, as far as when we're seeing different coverages, where we want to go with the ball.
Is Gronk goofy?
He's unusual. he's a hell of a lot of fun though, man. He is a hell of a lot of fun.
Give me an example.
Just talking to him, like, dude, did your elevator go all the way to the top? I mean, I'm not sure, but it is fun.
I find Gronk to be actually super bright and engaging and interesting as well. But yeah, I mean, like, it's interesting on how it's taken them this long to figure out how to use him. Right? Now, on some level, that's a good thing because you don't want to overuse him, so he takes a beating. Did you notice that now he's had all those surgeries on the left arm where he always wears the brace. You may have noticed or listened to him after the game the other day where he spiked the ball. The Gronk spike was at the left arm because his right arm was so sore. Like, that guy is a mess. Multiple back surgeries, ACL surgery, 4 surgeries, I think, on the left arm, and now the right arm's hurt. But yeah, he's a fun dude to have around. That's what the Fox said.
What does the Fox say?
Ramos, did you enjoy watching last night, or was it boring to you? Pitchers' duels sometimes can be boring.
It was not boring to me. It was a fun game for me. I mean, because the Dodgers won, so it was fun. But the pitcher, is it Glasnow? Is that how you say his name?
Yeah, Glasnow.
Glasnow. Yeah. I knew he was in trouble because he just kept walking too many players. You cannot walk. Walks in baseball are like errors or turnovers in basketball or football. There's or fumbles. You put guys on base. You put pressure on your team, and it eventually. I think he walked like 6 batters. It was. I don't care. He could throw 120 miles an hour.
He wasn't sharp.
No, he was not.
Wasn't sharp. Yeah. Look, I liked it. I thought it was a fun game. I don't know. We've been just really into this. I'll tell you what's bummed me out. Now, what is the story in your neighborhood with trick-or-treating?
My understanding that, well, I can't speak for everybody, but I don't think people are going to be trick-or-treating in their area. I think LA County has said, first they said it's banned, and then they kind of walked back and said, well, we don't encourage it. I'm guessing no one's going to be trick-or-treating in where we live in our area. Which sucks because I don't know if you remember this, but a couple years ago, actually many years ago, remember when they were finding where there's like needles in candy? Do you remember that?
I think that wasn't that like a myth?
No, I think there was found some stuff and trick-or-treating kind of went away for a while. Like people were really afraid to get stuff. And then the last 10 years, it's exploded again. Like it's hard to find places to walk in the area where I live on Halloween. Like, people are coming from out of the area. They drop the kids off in the area I live to go trick-or-treating. I'm really sad that that's going to stop this year because I think that kids really... I loved Halloween when I was a kid.
I think Halloween's an even bigger holiday
yes,
now.
Yes, I agree with you 100%.
Which I have no problem with, right? Like, one of my things is I get that we all get offended over lots of different stuff. But I also think that like Halloween things are not, I've said this, but we like almost idolize, like axe murderers. Like it's okay to get dressed up like an axe murderer, but it's not okay to make fun of somebody else in society. Like, look, there's a limit. There's a line there that you don't want to cross. But I do think there's a certain hypocrisy to many things we do. Buyer, now without kids, are you going to be what's going on in your neighborhood with trick-or-treating?
Yeah, there's not going to be anything happening for us. The light will be off. That's,
light will be off.
The light will be off.
Will you even get the bucket of candy and just go, hey, we put out a bucket of candy and a sign in case somebody comes by?
Well, the tricky thing about that is, you know, to John's point, I don't even think it's allowed. You're also then running the risk of somebody just taking the full basket of candy on the first time around and leaving.
All right, so. I got it. It's funny you say that. Okay, so I want you to picture this. This is like 10 years ago. In Canton, Connecticut. We had this house. It was on a street in a really cute neighborhood. And we got dressed as all the Wizard of Oz characters. And I was the straw man.
Okay.
Right? And so we go out. We go trick-or-treating. And we come back. We, at some point, you know, the kids are little. They're sugar high. They spin. They do somersaults. And then we put them to bed. So it's like 8:30. We turn the lights out. And we do leave the sign. Except, you know, light one light in front. And please take, you know, just a handful. All of a sudden, like, we hear this rustling around. We're like, man, somebody's taking all the candy. I go running downstairs to the master bedroom. And there's nobody out there. And the bowl is empty. And there's wrappers everywhere. And I look, and my dog, my basset hound, had gotten into it. It was at that time that I realized that though dogs are allergic to chocolate, they need, like, four times their body weight to die from chocolate. That dog had an iron stomach. Nothing happened to it at all. But that was... I have had the bowl emptied, but not by teenagers, by, at the time, like a 7-year-old basset hound who survived. There you go. There's my Halloween story. All right. Let's do this. Let's turn back to baseball upcoming next. We can have the Trout-Mookie debate, but it's also time to stop officially calling Clayton Kershaw a playoff choker. I'll tell you why next on the Doug Gottlieb Show.